It was the hope, wasn't it, that we would all meet at the same mountain, and which mountain would be clear, for it would be the highest of mountains, and the Lord's house would be upon it, and all the nations would be streaming to it. People would head to that mountain, for there they knew they would receive the instruction they needed and receive a holy word. On that mountain, people would be so transformed that they would then beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Their weapons of war would become tools for feeding many people. When I hear this passage from Isaiah, I think of a piece of artwork that sits by the entrance to the United Nations building in Manhattan. It is a bronze sculpture by Swedish artist Carl Friedrich Rudersword of an oversized Colt Python 357 Magnum revolver with a knotted barrel and the muzzle pointing upwards, not out. The artist made this sculpture after the singer, songwriter, and peace activist John Lennon was murdered. Not only does the sculpture speak to that moment in history, but also to the founding principles of the United Nations, that all nations would come together in this space and have the kinds of conversations that would turn our weapons of war into tools for peace all over the world. We certainly have the arena where peace can be built. However, our efforts towards peace will only be as successful as the investment and change required of each nation, including this one, to move towards that goal. So where is that holy mountain of which Isaiah speaks? Yesterday at this same time, I was on a real mountain. Over Thanksgiving, we spent 2 days with my dad and his wife at their new house up in the North Georgia mountains. My father has recently sold the yoga studio he owned and ran for 25 years. This move marks a new and quieter phase of his life, and he's trying to figure out what to do with his identity after he spent so many years identifying himself with this yoga center and community he worked so hard to create. My dad loves nature. He is such a nature boy, and he has a real sense of ritual. So earlier this fall, he took a 4-day solo pilgrimage onto a mountain in the woods around his house. He took no food, only water. He had no phone or other human contact other than to visit a designated place he and his wife chose, where he would go each day and leave a new rock to show that he was still alive. He would just spend those days fasting and meditating and relying on nature, facing his fears, his demons, and perhaps God. Now, over Thanksgiving, I asked my dad more about how his mountain forest pilgrimage went. It was really good. I loved feeling blanketed by the stars at night and being greeted by the creatures of the forest. They took really good care of me. However, my dad said, while I appreciated this experience, I did not leave feeling any new sense of direction as I had hoped. I think I should have stayed in the woods longer so that I really could have stretched myself out of my comfort zone. Dad, if you really wanted to go out of your comfort zone, couldn't you have just gone to a cocktail party? I asked my introverted father. I was only making a joke. However, I do recognize the spiritual value in taking yourself outside of your comfort zone. And we don't need to go on a 4-day fasting pilgrimage into the woods to do that. You see, Advent already builds that space for us. It beckons us outside of our comfort zones to prepare and make room for Jesus' arrival. As it is, we awake from our Thanksgiving stupor of eating too much turkey or whatever other kinds of comfort food your family serves, and we're ready again to fill ourselves with pumpkin spice lattes, Cyber Monday, familiar carols, cookies that will show up at every single church committee meeting between now and December 25th, and a sweet little baby Jesus thrown in there. But instead, the gospel throws at us a grown-up Jesus with frightening reminders of Noah and the flood that swept everything away. The gospel tells us of farmers in the field where one suddenly and mysteriously vanishes, or of two women at a millstone where, again, one vanishes and another stays. Today's gospel tells us of a thief breaking into the house at night, and the message is clear. Keep awake, be ready, for Jesus' coming will be like that, unexpected, surprising, and it may even involve some kind of loss. This passage does not make me feel comfortable. In fact, it makes me so uncomfortable that I had to resist the urge to do a little Christmas shopping on Amazon last night instead of writing my sermon. Today is a Sunday when we light the first Advent candle, and it is the candle for hope. What is so hopeful about loss? And when can we get back to climbing that holy mountain that Isaiah promises? I have been robbed before, and if that has happened to you as well, you know that the feelings that come up when something is stolen from you are not just about the material objects that were lost. Sometimes the even more troubling thing about being robbed is that it is a disorienting experience. You start to question everything that made you feel safe and secure. So it is very startling that Jesus does not use this, that Jesus chooses to use this kind of language about a thief in the night to describe his coming to us. Nadia Boltz-Weber suggests that the gospel is telling us that the grace of God is, in fact, like a thief in the night. She says, this holy thief wants to steal from us, and maybe that is literal and metaphoric at the same time. Because in this season of extreme levels of consumption, in which our credit card debts rise and our waistbands expand, maybe the idea that Jesus wants to break in and jack some of your stuff is really good news. I started thinking this week that maybe we should make Advent lists, kind of like Christmas lists, but instead of things we want Santa to bring us, we write down what we want Christ to take from us, you know, in hopes he could pickpocket the stupid junk in our houses or take off with our self-hatred or our resentment, maybe break in and take off with our compulsive eating or our love of money in the middle of the night. Don't you kind of long for a God to do something so unexpected? What will happen on this Advent journey is not entirely in our control, and we have to be okay with that. Advent, if we let it stretch us past our comfort zones, should be a little disorienting. But here is what we should remember. If we go back to that holy mountain, which the prophet Isaiah imagines for us, we will find that the people going down the mountain do not look the same as they looked when they were going up the mountain. As they stream up that holy mountain that stands taller than all the other mountains around it, they are carrying their swords. They are carrying their spears. But when they come down, we know they have received the Lord's instruction. They have learned God's ways and have chosen to walk in God's paths. And so, when they descend from God's mountain, not only have their tools for defense become tools of farming and of feeding, They also find that they walk in the light of the Lord. I'm not certain what that looks like, but I know I want to walk like that. Now, most of us don't walk around carrying deadly weapons, but we do walk carrying our own defenses. What would it look like if God changed those into something that heals or feeds ourselves and others? And how can that happen? We hold those questions in our hearts at the start of Advent as we look up that holy mountain. Remember, what happens on this journey is not entirely under our control. And we begin with a meal, not of our own making, but of Christ's blessing. Let us receive this grace, knowing that materially, it's only a small amount, but spiritually, it is all that we need. Thanks be to God. Amen.